very bottom of Chaf Hei Amud Beis, two lines from the bottom at the end of the line. So the Gemara asks, V'Rabbi Chia, Maishna ben Delo dekarovu etzalaviv, achnami karovu etzalachiv. This is a part of the discussion the Gemara was having on yesterday's daf about how in certain cases, relatives can be believed to testify that a person is a Kohen or that a person has certain type of yichus or genealogy. So the question is, why is it that according to Rabbi Chia, a son is not believed to testify regarding his father because he's related to him, but yet the Gemara said earlier that according to Rabbi Chia, a brother is believed to testify about his brother? What's the difference? They're both considered relatives. So the Gemara says, "B'meisiach lefitumo ki hada amar Rav Yehuda amar Shmuel ma'isa ba'adam echad she'meisiach lefitumo va'amar zechurani kishani tinok umurkav al ksefu shel aba v'hotziuni mibeis ha'sefer v'hifshituni eskutanti v'hitbiluni lecho b'tzrum ala erev v'Rabbi Chia mesayim ba'avachavei rai b'deilin mimeni v'yukorin osi yochanan ochel chalos sehelu Rabbi lechuhuna alpiv." The Gemara quotes the famous idea called "meisiach lefitumo." Meisiach lefitumo basically just means that you're shooting the breeze, that you're having a conversation that's not specifically related to the person's ichos, to the person's genealogy, whether he's a Kohen. You're talking about something else, and happened to be in the course of conversation, it came up almost incidentally that the person was a Kohen. The Gemara gives an example of a person who was one time schmoozing, and he basically said, "Oh, I remember when I was a kid, and my father used to put me on his shoulders, and he would take me out of school, and he used to, take off my cloak after school, and he would take me to the mikvah to go become tar to eat truma, and then Rabbi Chia added, and he would also make sure that I was separated from the other kids who were not kohanim, and they used to call him Yochanan, who would eat challah." So you see, based on this whole discussion, even though it was really incidental, that he was clearly a Kohen, and Rabbi promoted him to being a Kohen based on this incidental conversation. Okay, then the Gemara says, "Tan, Rishon ben Elazar Omer, Kishem shetruma chazaka lechuhuna, kach maiser rishon chazaka lechuhuna, v'hacholik bevezden ena chazaka." Comes the Gemara with the following. The Gemara says, just as a person who eats truma has a presumption of being a Kohen, because, obviously if they're eating truma, the odds are they're probably a Kohen, so too one who eats maiser rishon also has a similar presumption of being a Kohen. However, the person who gets the truma or the meiser in Bezdin, that's not good enough. It can't be administered. It can't be given out in Bezdin. That's not deemed to be a valid chazaka. So the Gemara asks, meiser rishon to Levi. The Gemara says, hang on 1 second. Meiser rishon is typically given to a Levi. How is that a proof that a person is a Kohen? So the Gemara says, nope. Ki Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah desanya truma lechoen meiser rishon lelevi divir Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah omer meiser rishon af lechoen. This is a famous Gemara which we referenced actually several times back in Yevamos. This is actually a machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Akiva holds that yes, Maaser Rishon is in fact given to the Levi, but Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah holds that Maaser Rishon can even be given to the Kohen. So the Gemara then asks, Amar da'amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah af lechoen, lechoen velo lelevi miyamar. The Gemara says, oh, maybe all Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah meant to say was that Maaser Rishon can even be given to the Kohen. But who's to say that it can only be given to the Kohen to the exclusion of a Levi? In other words, the fact that a person's eating Maaser Rishon, even according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, might not necessarily be a proof that he's a Kohen. He could still be a Levi. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. In Basar Dekansinu Ezra, this again is an allusion to the Gemara that we referenced back in Yevamos, that Ezra penalized the Levim because many of them did not go up with him to Eretz Yisrael to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash during the times of Bais Sheni, and the penalty was that they forfeited their right to consume Maaser Rishon. So according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, at the end of the day, after the penalty of Ezra, Levim were not allowed to eat Maaser Rishon anymore. That right was given to the Kohanim. So according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, a person who eats Maaser Rishon, it's just as much of a proof that they're a Kohen as if they were actually eating Truma. So the Gemara then asks, V'dilma ikru v'yohavule. The Gemara says, why is that a proof to anything? Maybe the guy happened to get his hands on Maaser Rishon. How do you know for a fact that it means that the person is a Kohen? So the Gemara says, no. Amar Rav Chista, hacha b'may askina kagon demuchsak lan ba'avua dehay dechoenu, v'nafak ale kolad ven grusho ven chalutzahu, v'cholkule lidide maaser b'veis agranus, levi delav levi hu ma'ika lememar. So I'm sorry. So the Gemara says that the case is the person has a presumption that he's a Kohen based on his father. In other words, we know the guy's father is a Kohen, but the problem was is that there were rumors that were spreading that maybe the father married a grusha or a chalutza, and that maybe the child is now a chalal. So now we're trying to reinforce the fact that the child is actually a regular Kohen. So now the Gemara says if you give him meiser in the granary, that's a sign that he's really a Kohen. So the Gemara says, so then again, the Gemara says, Levi, delav Levi, who might equal him, Amar. ben grusha o ben chalutzu. Lo mi baya lamanda amar meister rishon aser lezarim, de lo havu yahavu lei. Ela afilu lamanda amar meister rishon mutter lezarim, hane mile le misbak lehu, aval besores chaluka lo yahave lei. So the Gemara, again, probes even further. The Gemara says, again, if you're going to make the argument, first of all, as we noted earlier, that meister rishon doesn't go to the levi anyway, so then how does this indicate anything? The person is a ben grusha or a ben chalutza. If you're going to make the argument, in other words, if you're going to argue that Meiser Rishon doesn't have to exclusively go to the Kohen, so then it doesn't prove anything, the fact that the guy is getting Meiser Rishon. He could still very well not be a Kohen. So the Gemara explains, no, that in other words, obviously, according to the opinion that you're not allowed to give Meiser Rishon to a Zar, to a non-Kohen. In other words, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, that at the end of the day, after Ezra's penalty, that only Kohanim were entitled to Meiser Rishon, so then obviously, you're not giving Meiser Rishon to anyone other than an established, presumptive Kohen. If the guy is getting Meiser Rishon, then you know for a fact that he's a Kohen. But even according to the other opinion in the Gemara in Yevamos, that you can technically give Meiser Rishon to a non-Kohen, that it is mutter to give to a Zayar, to a non-Kohen, that's only true. In other words, that let's say I'm a Kohen, I can give Meiser Rishon to others to eat. That's in contrast to Truma. Truma, in other words, even if I'm a Kohen, I'm not allowed to give a non-Kohen Truma. In other words, he's never allowed to eat the Truma, and again, with the exception of the Eved of the Kohen, but I can't just stop give a regular guy who's not a Kohen Truma to eat. Whereas by Meiser Rishon, you can make the argument that yes, I'm allowed to give him the Meiser Rishon to consume, but you're not allowed to give it to him in what's called betoras chaluka, as a formal division. In other words, I can't go out of my way to say, okay, you who's not a Kohen, I'm going to give you my Sereshon. If I'm the Kohen and I own my Sereshon, I can give it to somebody else as opposed to Truma, but I can't lichadchila give it to someone who's not a Kohen. So then the Gemara asks, v'hacholik bevezden eina chazaka, I bevezden lahavya chazaka, hecha havya chazaka. So the Gemara goes back to a point that I referenced earlier, where the Gemara said that just because a person is given Meiser Rishon and Bezdin, that's not enough of a proof that he's a presumptive Kohen. So the question is, so then where is enough of a proof? If Bezdin is not, in other words, Bezdin usually is the place where everything, where all facts, where all halakha gets established. So if Bezdin is not good enough, so where is good enough to establish that a person is in fact a Kohen? So the Gemara says, no. Amar of Sheshas Hachi Kamer. Hacholik Truma Benichse Aviv Im Echav Bevezdin Ina Chazaka. What the Gemara meant to say was, is that if a person divvies up, or a person gets Truma as part of his father's property together with his brother in Bezdin, that is not considered to be a valid chazaka. In other words, there could still, you know, as we noted in the Gemara earlier, there could still be rumors that are percolating that the person is really a chalal, that the father actually married a ben grusha, that father actually married a grusha or a chalutza. So in other words, if a person, let's say, inherits truma as part of his father's estate, and he divides that truma up with his brother, it doesn't necessarily prove that he's a valid kohen. It could very well be that his father married a grusha or a chalutza, that he's in fact a chalal. So the Gemara says, pshita. So what's the chiddush? In other words, why would I think that just because the guy is getting truma as part of an inheritance in Bezdin, that should somehow prove that he's a real Kohen? So the Gemara says, you're right. Mahu desema mida hanach liachila hainami liachila kamash malan hanach liachila hailizabune. The Gemara says that one could have made the following argument, that one might have thought that just as these items that were given, that were inherited, are meant for eating, so too this is meant for eating, which should therefore prove that the person inheriting the truma or the Meiser Rishon is in fact a Kohen. So the chiddush is that it's not true, that just because the person inherited it, it doesn't necessarily mean he's allowed to eat it or that he's a real Kohen. It just means that maybe now he's allowed to sell it, right? In other words, it's possible for a non-Kohen to own Truma or to own Meiser Rishon. It just means that in certain cases, he's not allowed to eat it. So the fact is, the Chiddush is that he's allowed to sell it. That's okay. He's just not allowed to consume it unless we know for a fact, of course, that he's a Kohen. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ein Malin L'Chuhuna Al Pi Eidecha. The Mishnah said earlier that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the testimony of a single witness is insufficient to promote someone to a Kohen. If an Eidach walks into Bezdin and says, I know for a fact that Reuven is a Kohen, that's not good enough. So the Gemara then asks, Rashbag, Hainu Rabbi Elazar. This is referencing the different opinions in the Mishnah earlier, where the Mishnahis were talking about cases where there was some sort of contention in Bezdin, where somebody was questioning whether the person was a Kohen. Maybe they were claiming that the father married a Grusha or whatever it was. And then one aide tries to come to counter that. So the Gemara asks, if you look at the opinions quoted in the Mishnah earlier of Rabbi Shob ben Gamliel and Rabbi Elazar, they both seem to be saying the same idea, namely that an Eid Echad is not believed to counter any sort of claim that undermines the credibility or undermines the fact that a person might actually be a Kohen. So the Gemara then pushes back. V'chi tema ar archad ika benayu. The Rabbi Elazar savar ar archad v'rashbag savar ar archrei. So maybe you'll make the following distinction. Maybe you'll argue that the machlokes between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shob ben Gamliel is about how many people are required when they're protesting, when they're they're trying to counter your claim to really say that the claim is invalid. In other words, one could argue that according to Rabbi Elazar, even if one guy comes and tries to contend the fact that you're a Kohen and says, really, your father married a Grusha and therefore you're a Chal, therefore you're not a Kohen, so then the question would be, if now another Eid Echad comes and tries to push back, do we just ignore him? So that could be according to Rabbi Elazar, whereas according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, you could say that no, that the only time we ignore an Eid Echad is if you have two Eidim who are claiming that your father married a Grusha, but if it's just one Eid against another, so then you're just, you know, kind of stuck back at square one, and you're back to your original presumption that you're still a Kohen. So the Gemara pushes back on that, on that notion. The Gemara says, "Ha'amar Rabbi Yochanan, divrei hakol ein arar pachos mishnayim." Rabbi Yochanan said that that's not true. That there is no such thing as a contention offered, as a contested claim offered in Beis Din with less than two eidim. If one eid walks into Beis Din and tries to argue that your father married a grusha, we just ignore him. We don't listen to that. In other words, the only time we give, grant any credibility to anyone to walk into Beis Din to put forth such a claim is if there's at least two eidim there. So the Gemara says, "You're right." Ela hacha b'may eskinan de muchzak lan ba'avua dehay dechoinu the nafaka. So the Gemara has this very, very complicated case here. The case that the Gemara is referencing is the following. We have a presumption that the person is a Kohen because we know that his father is a Kohen. Then there are rumors that start spreading that his father married a Grusha and therefore he's really a Chala. So based on those rumors, we demote him and we say, okay, you're no longer a Kohen. Then an Eid Echad walks into Beis Din and says, no, his father did not marry a Grusha, the kid's a real Kohen, and then we promote him back to being a Kohen, and then two Eidim come in and say, no, the father really did marry a Grusha or a Chalutza, then we demote him, and then another Eid Echad walks in and says, no, really, the father did not marry a Grusha, and the kid is really a valid Kohen, and then we again promote him. In other words, at the end of the day, what you have is, you basically have two against two. The only question is that the two Eid Echads came at separate times. In other words, you had two individual Eidim saying that the kid was a Kohen, and then you had two Eidim coming together claiming that the kid was not a Kohen. So now the question is, what do you make of this information? So the Gemara says, "Uduchule alma mitstarfin leedas v'halcha b'mechash lizilusa deveidina kum miflagei." Tanakama savar kevin da'achtina lemaskinan lechayshinan lizilusa deveidina v'rashbag savar anan achtinan leva anan maskinan le ulizilusa deveidina lechayshinan. The Gemara says like this: that according to this opinion in the Gemara, everybody agrees that the two singular Eidim who are coming at different times, who are claiming that the kid is a real Kohen, of course they can combine together. If those two Eidim could not combine together, then this whole discussion is moot, because the other two Eidim who came together claim that the kid is not a Kohen. So if you had two real Eidim claiming the kid is not a Kohen, and then two singular Eidim saying that the kid was, but you didn't think that those singular Eidim combined, then this whole discussion is out the window, because obviously two Eidim are always going to trump one Eid. So obviously you have to assume that those two singular Eidim combine into one group. The only question, the only issue that the Gemara is bothered with is this technicality that's called Zilusa de Beidina. Zilusa de Beidina literally means it's degrading to Beis Din. It doesn't look right when Beis Din says that he's a Kohen, that he's not a Kohen, that he's a Kohen. In other words, it looks like Beis Din's all over the place here. So the Gemara says that that's the machlokas. That's the issue at hand here. According to the Tanakhama, he says that once you demoted the person from being a Kohen, you can't just, you know, go back and forth and back and forth. So once Beis Din issues the psak, that's it. The case is closed. Whereas, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that's not the case. He says, in other words, Bezdin's the one who demoted him initially, so we can promote him again. There's no concern for this idea called Zilusa Davidina. That's how the Gemara formulates this machlokas. So then the Gemara pushes back. Maskif lo Ravashi, ihachi afilu treyu treinami. If this is a machlokas that revolves around this technicality called Zilusa Davidina, that we're afraid of degrading Bezdin, that people won't take their authority seriously, so then why does the Gemara have to come up with this convoluted case where it's one aid, then two aidim, then another aid, we're combining two, even if it's just two against two? Straight up, I have two Eidim come in and say the kid's Kohen, two Eidim say he's not, and that's it. There's no 1-2-1, it's just two versus two. So presumably, the same machlokas should apply there as well, because you have two Eidim saying the kid's a Kohen, two Eidim saying that he's not, so why don't we have that same concern about Zilusa Davidina there? So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela amar Ravashi b'mitztarfin le'idus kom miflugei uveflukta dahani tanoi desanyam. Ein edusan mitzarefes ad sheyiru shneim keachad. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha Omer afilu bezeh achar zeh. Ve'ein edusan miskayemes bevez din ad sheyidu shneim keachad. Rabbi Nasan Omer shomin dvarav shel zeh hayom chsheyavah chaveru lemachar shomin dvarav. So the Gemara recants and retracts its original position. Initially, the Gemara thought that there's no way that anyone thinks that those two singular edim do not combine, because otherwise it's a moot point. If the two singular edim don't combine, then obviously they can't go up against two edim. Now the Gemara is saying no, at that point, actually is subject to a machlokes. So according to the Tana Kama, those two singular edim cannot combine as one set of two edim unless they witness the testimony together. If they're just two random guys who happen to see the same thing, but they weren't, seeing the events together. They were watching it out of different windows or whatever it was. So according to the Tana Kama, that's not good enough. They cannot combine as a set of two edim. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha, he says that it makes no difference. Even if the two edim come one after another, they're not walking into Bezin together. They never even met each other. They never witnessed the case together, but they both happened to see, or they both happened to know that the father, let's say, married a woman who was not a grusha, whatever the case was. So then we can believe them and they do combine together. That's one point. And then the other machlokas in the Gemara is whether, again, we can accept testimony. In other words, only when the two Edom come together, that's according to the Tana Kama. Whereas according to Rabbi Nassan, even if they come on separate days, let's say Reuven walked into Bezin today and Shimon walked into Bezin tomorrow, and they both said the same thing, so according to Rabbi Nassan, that's also fine. So these two issues, in other words, the Gemara's Maskana is that this has nothing to do with Zilus of the Beidina. This is not about, some technicality about whether we're afraid for people not taking Bezin seriously. That's not the issue. The issue is a much more fundamental one, namely, do we assume that Edom can combine only when they mamish walking together, they witness the case together, everything happened at once, or no, they can walk in separate. Separately, they can walk on separate days, they can have witnessed the case from different vantage points. So that's the issue, that's the machlokas at hand, whether we assume that the witnesses combine in this context or not. Billy, a question?
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, me, Ramon, you answered it at the end, there. Zalutza to Beis Dina, to me it's more of a Zalutza if they don't come up with the right answer.
True, correct.
They changed their mind.
That's a fair point, but again, you also have to realize that from the vantage point of the, again, this was all in the Hava, when the Gemara, thought that Zilus was even an issue, is that it just doesn't look good if Bezin keeps, basically being wishy-washy. They keep flip-flopping back and forth. The issue is more basic than just, coming to the truth of this specific case, that people won't end up taking the Bezin seriously in general. I think that's the bigger issue. Okay, so fine. So the Mishnah says, so Isha Shenechbisha Bidei Ovde Kochavim, the Mishnah now is discussing a scenario of a woman who was taken into captivity, and now we want to know, is there a presumption that the woman was raped? Now again, as we'll talk about in the Gemara, as we'll see, this may only have ramifications if she's married to a Kohen. Again, it's going to depend on the scenario, obviously, as we'll see, but basically the Mishnah makes the following distinction. It depends why she was captured in the first place. So if she was taken captive for monetary reasons, meaning let's say she was being held for ransom, right? So they wanted ransom from the husband. So the presumption is that they're probably not going to rape her because they want to, because if they want their money, they're going to have to leave her intact. Whereas if they were just capturing her and they were just planning to kill her, so the presumption was that they probably did rape her before the husband had, let's say, in theory, if the husband managed to get her back, so then the presumption is that she's going to be forbidden to her husband. Okay, so the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak Amar Rav, Lo Shanu Ela Sheyad Yisrael Tkifa Al Ovdei Kochavim, Aval Yad Ovdei Kochavim Tkifa Al Atzman Afilu Al Demaman Asru Labayla." Comes the Gemara and qualifies the Mishnah and says that this distinction that the Mishnah draws between being captured for ransom versus just because we want to kill you, that distinction only bears fruit or is only valid when the Jewish people have shlita or have rulership or have control over the non-Jews, let's say living in Eretz Yisrael. But if the non-Jews are running the show, if they're running the government, so then even if you took someone for ransom, so they could do whatever they want, the odds are is that even in that case, they probably raped. Okay, so the Gemara then asks, Masiv Rava, hey, it Reb Yosi HaKohen, Reb Zecharia ben Akatzav, Al Bas Yisrael, Shehor Hena ba'ashkelon, V'richakua b'nei mishpachta, V'edeha me'idim osa shalon nistera v'shalon nitma'a, V'amru lohem chachamim, im atem aminim shehor hena, haminu shalon nistera v'shalon nitma'a, V'im I atem aminim shalon nistera v'shalon nitma'a, Al ta'aminu shehor hena. So the Gemara asks, based on the following, based on the Mishnah Maseches Eidos. Mishnah Eidos says there was a Jewish girl who was taken as some sort of collateral, again, some form of ransom, whatever you want to call it, in the city of Ashkelon, and her family members distanced themselves from her, again, on the presumption that she was likely raped. But then the Gemara says that Edom came into Bezdin, and they said that this woman, even though she was taken captive, was never alone in a room with another man, she was never defiled, she was never raped, so she's totally fine. So the Chachamim then responded, they said, well, make up your mind. If you believe that she was really taken captive and taken as collateral or as ransom, whatever it is, so then you should also believe the Edim that she wasn't raped. And if you don't believe that she was not raped, in other words, that she wasn't defiled, so then you should also not believe that she was taken captive, as collateral or for ransom in the first place. So the Gemara then asks, V'ha Ashkelon, Diado de Kochav Tkifa al Atzman, V'katani Horhena in Nech B'shalo. The Gemara says, but Ashkelon was a city that was run by the non-Jews. They were running the show there, and yet the Gemara still draws a distinction between whether she was taken dafka for money, for ransom, for collateral, versus just stam being incarcerated, just stam being taken captive. So the Gemara says, you see from here that this distinction between being taken captive for ransom versus just because we're going to end up killing you and therefore it's more likely we're going to rape you. So the Gemara says that distinction holds true even when the non-Jews are running the show, which is against the Gemara's earlier qualification. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Hu hadina filu nechpesha, umaisashaya kachaya. The Gemara says, really, the same would have been true even if she was taken captive, not for ransom purposes, not for monetary purposes. It just happened to be that in this particular instance, she was taken captive for ransom. But the Gemara says that the din would hold true across the board. Okay, then the Gemara says, Ika da Amre, Amarava, Afana Nami Tanina, Heyid Reb Yossi HaKohen, Reb Zcharia Ben Akatzav, Abbas Yisrael Shehorhena Ba'ashkelon, Verichakua B'nei Mishpachta, Ve'ideha Me'idim Aleha Shalanista Rav Shalanma, Ve'amru Chachamim, Im Atem Aminim Shehorhena, Ha'aminu Shalanista Rav Shalanma, Ve'im Ein Atem Aminim Shalanista Rav Shalanma, Al Ta'aminu Shehorhena, Ve'ha'ashkelon. So the Gemara in the second version, it's the exact same story here. It's the same exact case where the girl was taken captive at Ashkelon, and again, the Edom claimed that she wasn't raped, but the family members were still distancing themselves from her. So now the Gemara says, and the Gemara changes one caveat in the second version, whereas in the first version of the Gemara's point was, well, Ashkelon is a city that's run by the non-Jews, and we're still drawing distinctions between being taken captive for ransom versus just, you know, stam, because we're going to end up killing you. In the second version, the Gemara says that the facts of the case were that the girl was taken captive specifically for ransom, and the only reason why we're assuming that the girl is still allowed to remain married to her husband is specifically because there were Edom who testified that she wasn't raped, implying that if there were no Edom, then even though she was taken captive for ransom, she would still be forbidden to her husband, which again is also against what the Gemara's earlier qualification was, because the Gemara earlier sounded like that any time a girl was taken captive for ransom, for collateral, for monetary purposes, she's always permitted to her husband, even in the absence of Eden. That's against what the Gemara's inference here. So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. My love, loshno horhena, veloshno nechbisha, isn't the implication of the second version of the Gemara that it makes no difference why she was taken captive? If at the end of the day they're doing it for ransom, with or without Eden, it sounds like it should be problematic. So the Gemara says, lo, horhena shiny. The Gemara says, no, in the case where she's taken captive for collateral, for monetary purposes, for ransom, that's going to be different. Namely, we're going to assume that she's still going to be permitted to her husband. Then the Gemara says, Ika derami la mirma. Some pose this as a contradiction. Tanan al yidei mamon muteres labayla. The Mishnah said that if the woman was taken captive for ransom, for monetary purposes, she's allowed to remain married to her husband. Urim minu hey Reb Yosi v'ha Ashkelon da al yidei mamon v'katani taima de idim idimosa ha ein idim idinosa lo. So the Gemara now just poses the same point as a contradiction. Whereas in our Mishnah it said that if the woman was taken captive for ransom, she's allowed to remain married to her husband. But then the Mishnah in Edio says that in the city of Ashkelon, which again was monetary in nature, the only reason why she was allowed to stay married to her husband was because there were Edom who specifically testified that she wasn't raped, implying that if there were no Edom, then she would be forbidden. So the Gemara says, "Lo." So the Gemara says, "Umeshane Amar Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak Lo Kashia Kanshiad Yisrael Tkifa Lo Dekochavim Kanshiad Dekochavim Tkifa Ala." So the Gemara draws the same exact distinction that we keep on pointing out, which is it's just a question of who's in charge here. Are the Jews in charge or are the non-Jews in charge? So at the end of this whole Gemara, the Gemara is again it's quoting a lot of different technicalities here, but there are two major factors to consider. One is whether the Jews are running the show or not, and the other question is whether the impetus for her captivity is monetary, is a ransom, or it's just stam, we're going to capture her, rape her, and then kill her. So then obviously those are going to be two very different outcomes. And then we'll just finish up to the Mishnah. So we said, Aydena Fashto Sasura, right? The Mishnah said that if she was taken captivity because, stam for killing her, right? So then the assumption was that she was raped. So Amar Rav could go into Sheik Ganve. So Rav gives an example, the wives of the bandits. In other words, their husbands were thieves who were likely going to be executed by the government anyway, so they had no qualms about raping these women. The Levi Yomer could go in Ishto Shel Ben Dunai. Ben Dunai was known as a Rotseach. Rashi says his name was Elazar Ben Dunai. He was a murderer. So again, in other words, and anyone who's sentenced to death, essentially, the assumption is that their wives are basically Hefker at that point. Amar Chizkiya v'hu shenigmar dina lahariga v'Rabbi Yochanan Amar afal pishel l'nigmar dina lahariga. But then there's a technical machlokes about whether the wives of these people are going to be permissible or forbidden. In other words, do we require a gemar din? There's a need to be a formalized verdict that the person is now chayiv misa. We're going to bring them out. We're going to kill them, and then at that point the assumption is that their wives are hefker and the goyim will do whatever they want. Or no, is it even if there's no formalized gemar din, they haven't come to Bezin yet, but we know that the guy murdered, we know the guy stole, and we know that eventually he's going to be, you know, there's going to be a verdict issue that he's going to be put to death. So maybe already at that point we can assume that the wives are hefker and the goyim will already have raped him. Okay.